Buzz! 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 Buzz!
Welcome into a mid-season, mid to late season recap, rehash edition of At the Buzzer, a Ralphie Report podcast. And that's the end of our affiliation, Ralphie Report podcast, talking about all of our Colorado Athletic news, opinions, anything we want. And I guess today we are focusing on the thing that usually gives us hope in February and January, but decidedly this year has not, where we can find hope elsewhere. So to talk about Tad Boyle and CU's men basketball program, of course, you have one co-host, Jack, always here, unfortunate for all of you listeners. And on the other side is other co-host, Sam. Hello, Sam. Give us a little, there you go. And then we have, of course, special guest, returning all-star, what would you call that? Nostra Buffus of all things basketball. We have Ben Burroughs, Rumbling Buff, once again. Welcome, Ben.
Hey, everyone. Good to be back. A little under the weather today, but happy to power through and talk some hoops.
Well, and powering through is what we've all had to do for the last month. What a professional segue. I'm in it. So, we want to talk about CU men's basketball. As you might know, dear listener, we had Ben Burroughs and Will Whalen before the season. We had them on the mics to discuss their thoughts, our thoughts as a whole, about this season's outlook for CU basketball. There was a lot of returning faces, but young faces. So we figured it'd be nice to have a nice a 2-hour hash out regarding our thoughts on the season. And I listened to some of it again. I did not listen to all 2 hours of it again because I don't like hearing myself at all, and that's a lot. But in general, I think we landed on high teen win season, some things to build on for next year, but definitely some growing pains. And I think Will was probably the most pessimistic in that range, and I was probably the most optimistic in that range. But I think we all landed around there, and we also probably all mentioned probably not going to make the tournament this year. Tough team to make the tournament with. Here we are. It is February 1st. CU just lost to the 197th ranked team on KenPom, which, of course, is Oregon State Beavers.
It's not even our worst loss of the year.
Well,
not even second worst loss of the year.
We can get into all of this. Yes. A lot of duds. But we sit here, the fans, I guess, and watchers of a 12-11 basketball team. So just opening up the floor, based off of how we thought this year was going to go, how do you feel about this year as it is going? Let's start with Ben.
I think the narrative is certainly more negative than maybe we would have expected. Even with, you know, I think I probably, you know, in my prognostications, I probably came up with 18 wins, somewhere there around. I mean, we're on pace for that. We can still get that. It's not completely out of the question. We still have a number of home games, still have more home games than road games, remainder of the season, things like that. But the narrative of some of the losses, particularly how they've come about, has been honestly rather stunning. You referenced the Oregon State loss. You also obliquely referenced the Cal loss and the Grambling State loss from earlier, and even the Massachusetts loss and the Washington loss at home. Those are what I would consider unacceptable from a program that I have come to have some expectations for.
Yep.
And there's really no hiding from that. Those are five losses that you can't have in this program. And, you know, that's not covering up for the fact that we've also had some wins that it's like, damn, I didn't think we'd have those wins. Certainly the Tennessee game is one of them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Texas A&M way back when on the beach, and even that Oregon game at home, we blew them out. Mm-hmm. Like, those are solid wins. Those are good wins. So it's not saying that we haven't had high points this year, but just the narrative of those bad losses coupling with some really inconsistent and plain bad performances, it paints a picture that more or less, you know, the total, you know, wins-loss picture can still get to where we expected at the beginning of the year, but the total narrative is definitely down.
Yeah, we're also recording 2 hours before CU plays Cal, so
I think that's tomorrow.
It's tomorrow. Oh, I thought today was Thursday.
It depends on when this episode comes out.
Depends when this episode comes out. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, it's been bad. 5 out of 6 losses. The offense looks broken beyond belief right now.
Yeah.
And, like, we did have those wins earlier in the year, but they've dried up a bit. And really like is this something we should have seen coming?
So like I said, I've re-listened to some of the preview pod. Yeah. I can tell you some of the things that we did talk about and how it turned out during the year. Sorry, finish your thought before I get in there. Is this something we should have seen coming? Any other things there?
Oh, no. I thought you were going to keep going.
So I will keep going now. We mentioned a few stretches in the season that we thought would tell us a lot about this team. I think we mentioned the stretch from Tennessee to Washington in the non-con, or what we're calling the non-con, that there was two conference games in there. And CU played in seven game series: Tennessee, Massachusetts, A&M, Boise State, Yale, Arizona State, and Washington. CU,
and that was 2 weeks of calendar time that we played.
There's a neutral third-party tournament for the first four of those games, and then home games for Yale and Arizona State, and then on the run to Washington. CU went 3-4 in those games, and I would assume the weirdest way possible. So I think what really made this season look weird is back-to-back losses against Grambling State and wins against Tennessee, who is now easily number one on KenPom, by the way. That set this season up for a roller coaster, and then CU has continued to ride that roller coaster as hard as possible. A loss against Massachusetts the very next day, who's 152nd in KenPom, Frank Martin, shout out. A win against Texas A&M, who's 40th in KenPom, and CU demolished them. That was not even close. Oh my God, that game was incredible. A loss against Boise State, who's turned out to be a pretty tough team, and they played really hard defense that game. And then a tough win against a Yale team that's old, experienced, and runs good offense. Then you follow that up with back-to-back losses, a soul-destroying loss against Arizona State, where I forgot their – oh, my God, is it Cambridge? One of their senior guards comes in real hot in the second half and then shoots a crazy three to win in the last possession by one. And then CU goes on the road against a Washington team who's okay at best and loses at the Alaska Airlines Arena. I believe Ben was at that game, but that arena is cursed, and I continue to believe so. Ending that stretch at 3-4, crazy stretch of 3-4. I also want to say we mentioned the stretch kind of at the beginning of the conference play, the stretch we're kind of in right now of hosting the Washington schools at home, splitting the Oregon road trip if possible, and then hosting the Bay Area school at home as a place where CU can get some momentum after what looked to be a pretty tough start to conference play. Yeah. I would say that as a team, CU has not gained the momentum that I would expect them to gain during that time period. And the nail in the coffin, not the nail in the coffin, but it's tough for me to look at that Oregon State trip. I don't know. That Oregon game had a comeback near the end, but that really sunk into me of, oh yeah, this team is more than just inconsistent. It is hard to watch and straight up bad at times, which is something that doesn't – you can be hard to watch a Tab Oil team, but they're not often just bad. And it felt like they were bad for a decent stretch of that road trip.
Yeah, and we still could have won that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny. So I was at I was at the Avs game that night, and I was going to watch the game on replay. It was my friend's birthday. We went to the Avs game. Nice. And she leaned over at one point and showed me the score right before halftime. And I went, oh, we're going to lose that game by five. We'll put up a fight in the second half and we'll end up losing that game by five. And sure enough, we end up losing it by like six, so the exact way I predicted it in that moment. So the team is bad, but they're also kind of predictable at this point.
Yeah.
You kind of know, like, through the start of the game or even by the tempo stats, you can kind of go, oh, I expect this. You're talking about, should we have foreseen some of these things? And I was kind of looking back at some historical markers and going, hey, should I have paid more attention to some of these things? So we come in without while KJ was anointed the point guard, and I think he'd earned that role, it's not necessarily his most comfortable position. In fact, I don't think it's a position he's playing next year, which I'm sure we'll talk about. We lost a very emotional leader in Evan the year after we lost another emotional leader in Tin. So we're finally, you know, the butcher's bill is due when it comes to that. And we're also playing 10 deep. And all of those things I probably should have paid a little bit more credence to. It's kind of when you're playing 10 deep, it's kind of like having two quarterbacks. If you have two quarterbacks, you have none. If you're playing 10 deep, there's a reason why you're playing 10 deep. You don't trust the 8 or 7 enough to only play 8 or 7. Okay, that's fair. The emotional leader, we've seen that in the past. The year after Spencer departs, you know, we really struggle to find some grounding leadership. Same thing with the point guard, Spencer Departs. We try to anoint, Ski as the point guard. And we really struggle that year because of a lot of the same things. You know, if you compare, the season over season to that Ski senior year, you're going to see some similarities. And I think we're paying some butcher's bills when we come to a lot of those trends, those narrative trends that I wanted to look past because I thought we'd grown past.
Yep.
But maybe they're just things that, no, that's too difficult to overcome in a single year kind of things. And maybe I should have paid a little bit more attention to. But again, you know, if we have a strong end of the year, we could still get to that 17-18 win line and be more or less where we expected.
I think that makes sense, especially with what you said at the end there regarding that you thought that we might have grown past those growing pains or, you know, evolved past those growing pains. I was right there with you because the talent level on paper on this team is probably the best in the Tab Boyle era up there. At the very least, you know, KJ Simpson, highly recruited guard, highly ranked guard, Lawson Lovering, highly recruited, highly ranked. Tristan Da Silva, less so, but you know what you kind of have there. Javon Ruffin is solid as a recruit. You know, Nick Clifford was a highly rated recruit. Like, there was some guys on this team. And Quincy Allen, of course, we expected as a highly rated recruit. Like, there's talent on this team that I was expecting would help this next evolution of Tab Boyle's coaching to, like, weather those bumps. Because you can rely on the talent when the leadership isn't there or when, you know, KJ isn't running the offense that you needed to. And it turns out I was very wrong in that and a player-led program like Tab Boyle runs, you definitely need everyone on the same page. And it's very important, I think, for that lead guard to get people on the same page. And when that's not there all the time, a lot of things suffer all at once. And it makes it look bad on offense, I guess. And that's some of where I'm at here. And then later on, I'll discuss what I consider the black hole on the wing. But in my opinion, those are the two main issues with this team that I did not see coming when we were looking at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, and maybe we put a little too much stock in what KJ could be compared to, you know, where he realistically – I mean, if you look at it, if you take a step back, take two steps back, he's not having that bad of a year.
Right.
If you look at his performances since he got back from the NorCal trip, and he had that illness, and, you know, he was out for a game, and I think it really threw off his rhythm, and he's been really fighting his body since then.
Yeah.
I think you start to understand that maybe there's too much pressure in the system put on him because there's no other options.
Yep.
I mean, Tristan's going to do what he does, and, you know, he looks good scoring. You know, sometimes what he does other than scoring comes and goes, but that's neither here nor there. But I think maybe because of a lot of other guys not being able to live up to the expectations.
Yeah.
KJ is having to carry so much of the weight creatively. Thank you.
I have thoughts and stats. I have stats and thoughts.
Go ahead.
So in those seven games since the Cal game in which KJ exploded for like 19 points in like the last 5 minutes of the game. All right. KJ is shooting 30% from the field.
Oh my God.
15% from three. He has as many turnovers as assists. And the worst thing, too, is that he's kind of just still chucking shots even when his shot isn't falling. Like that one of 13 from the field against Oregon, that kind of...
Oregon State, right?
Oh, Oregon State, sorry. Like, that's just brutal.
Yeah.
But it's because he has to, right? Yeah. There's no other option on this team. If he wasn't... he should not have taken 13 shots, but he had to take those 13 shots. Because who else is going to do it?
Yeah. Exactly. I was about to say, too, it's like, and you could see it in the Washington State game, specifically where it's like every single time he called for a pick, he had two guys on him hard. And they're trying to get the ball out of his hands.
They're going to try.
He has pretty much no other, like, options. Like, no one's going to make a play off of that. No one can punish the 4-on-3, whatever, that they're being left with. It's pretty brutal to see offensively. And like, I can't blame KJ for that.
No, absolutely not. And that is not even close to what I'm trying to say there. You know, you look at, and plus minus is a terrible, terrible stat. Like, it's not a stat you should really look at, but there was only two players on the entire team who were in positive numbers in that Oregon State game. And that was KJ, who, as we said, went 1-for-13 for the field,
right,
and Lawson Lovering. Everyone else had a negative. And that's going to happen when you lose ball games. That's why it's a bad stat. Nonetheless, he even though he wasn't scoring, he was still creating enough offense with the team on the court.
Yeah.
To help the team stay in the game.
Yeah. I also do want to point out too that since the Cal game in which Tad challenged him to play harder in defense, he has been fantastic on that end.
Yeah. There's no qualms with this team on defense. Yeah, like, we are a really good defensive team.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the positivity.
I think Sam
Tristan is a bucket and he's fun to watch.
I think a part of that point too, Sam, is I think CU is just exceedingly easy to scout now, which is what we've seen in this stretch of conference play, at least on offense, right? There's only two guys that defenses really have to key in on, right? It's Tristan Da Silva and it's KJ Simpson. Who else are they really going to put time and effort into stopping when they need to? And that's something I guess I did not foresee coming into this year. I thought depth would be kind of a strength this year with who we had coming back and some of the exciting pieces coming in. But I think that it's one of the biggest misses definitely that I had is just no one else has shown they can be an offensive threat. There are some people that I think that's okay, and we can talk about them in a little bit. We are a Lost and Loving podcast, but there are some people where that's not okay. And I think that's a huge part of those issues that we've talked about, especially with KJ. Is like, it's very easy to scout him. You can just double him whenever you want, because as long as you rotate to help Tristan, who else is going to shoot the ball? Abby can't shoot. That's not even his fault, really. But, you know, it's hard for him, I think, to get going because of how easy it is to stop CU's offense. Like schematically.
Well, I think there's some other factors in the one player we haven't talked about in terms of, okay, maybe they've emerged as a competent offensive impact player is Javon Ruffin.
Yeah.
Last couple of weeks before he got injured, he's really starting to get comfortable with his shot, get comfortable with his role off the bench. Yes. And, the first game without him is Washington, and we can't beat a zone without a shooter. And without him on the team and without Tristan, everyone else on this team is shooting 30% or worse.
I have a stat for you, by the way, when we finish up. Yep.
Yeah. So, that's a key missing component of this, particularly the last couple of weeks. We go 1-3 in a stretch that we probably should have gone 3-1 in at the worst. I mean, that's part and parcel of it. I'm not saying it isn't, it's really rough when turnovers are high and you can't shoot your way out of it.
Yes. And turnovers have remained an issue really a lot. I mean, Grambling State was probably when we really saw a lot of that start. But turnovers have been an issue for this team the entire year. And that's pretty much across the board. It's not just at the guards and it's not just at the bigs. This team just has a hard time passing to each other, it seems like, which causes issues because you have empty possessions. And then when you can't shoot your way out of empty possessions, your points per possession is going to be pretty bad. And it's hard to defend your way out of that big of a hole.
Yeah. And I always bring up the fact, too, is like when you can't make passes, you can't catch them in traffic. It just leads to a lot of turnovers and easy transition points. And it's just like, it's just a snowball effect. Like,
yeah, we have too many live ball turnovers. That's the real key. Like running over a dude and getting an offensive foul turnover. That's one thing. Throwing a ball out of bounds. That's another. Getting ripped and run on. That's really big. And the non-steal turnovers are bad, but we're also getting ripped and run on quite a bit.
Yeah.
Particularly on dribble drive penetration. There is the passing issue. Like, Lawson can't catch in the paint. Okay, we all know this, right? But no one can catch.
Yeah.
Like, no one can catch. And there's a decision-making factor. There's a trust factor. There's a lot of guys on this team that I don't think trust each other to catch my pass. And there's those issues. But then there's also just we've seen the offense be run faster this year than it has in the history of Tad Ball.
Yep.
And I think there's an aspect of it that we're trying to go too fast. And getting into our sets and things like that may be contributing to that.
Yep.
But those factors right there, the inability to catch sometimes, but then the trust factor, and then the speed factor, I think contribute to those turnover issues.
So I do want to transition to some overall thoughts, which we've touched on a few of those there, but want to mention some player specific thoughts. Before I do that, I'm gonna read you a set of three numbers twice. The first set of three numbers is 40%, 42%, and 46%. The second set of three numbers is 24%, 30%, and 23%. Any guesses on what those three numbers could be? And to be fair, they are the same numbers split across a year series. So the first set of numbers was 2022. The second set of numbers was 2023 this current season.
I'm assuming that's Neek.
Yeah.
Okay.
Neek shooting numbers.
That is the three-point shooting percentage of Neek Clifford, number one, Julian Hammond, number two, and Luke O'Brien, number three, all year over year. That is also, I think, a huge issue as we transition to some bigger thoughts about this team and specific players, is that all three of them are slumping compared to last year, and that makes it really, really hard to get offense off the bench. Neek Clifford shooting 24% on 53 attempts is tough. Luke O'Brien shooting 23% on 40 attempts is also tough. And Hammond shooting 30% on 53 attempts as well. That all three of them regressed compared to last year's shooting percentages. And, you know, three-point shooting isn't everything, but it's a lot of things, especially off the bench. And really the only guy I trust on the bench to shoot a single three right now is Javon Ruffin. And that's not good for him. That's not a good spot for him to be in. So anyways, I just thought that was interesting that all three of them moved down drastically compared to last year's percentage.
Yeah, and those are your three Colorado kids too. And that's the core of your program. And they slumped pretty bad. Now, that's not to say they can't be good in the future. Like, we saw that with Levi Newton, right, way back when. This is over a decade ago at this point. Levi couldn't hit the broadside of a bar in his sophomore year, and he could barely do it his junior year. And then all of a sudden he comes out as a senior and can't miss.
Yes.
So maybe Luke O'Brien's going to wake up tomorrow and he's the next Levi Newton. You know, hey, maybe. But
maybe I'll walk on and be that guy.
Sure, exactly.
Too.
Yeah. But it's one of those cold light of days things when you look at your Colorado recruits and you look at the expectations for them in this program and they're not living up to it. And it's hard. And you know, I've thought a lot this season about, you know, hey, maybe some decisions need to get made. Because
for the first time in a long time in a Taboo program, I've thought, really since Rodney Billups was a recruiting coordinator, I've thought, like, there might need to be some pretty big turnovers that were not expected.
And that's not me saying, like, you know, Tad should start cutting people or anything like that, because I would never advocate that. I think some of this is going to be player driven. Like, hey, maybe this isn't right for me. I don't know.
Yeah, Kuntz is a great example. I think Dalen Kuntz is having a great career at Northern Colorado, and that's not a bad thing. That I think he realized they both. I think Tad Boyle's honest with players all the time. I think they both realized you don't fit here, and you should go where you fit. I'm not going to hold you here. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially because I think there's still a lot of opportunities out there for guys, particularly in the portal era. Like, find your spot.
Yeah. Well, and I will say on the other side of this, something that Tad Boyle did not have last year that he does have this year, courtesy of Rick George and the lock of Phil DeStefano, is transfer portal rules that make sense. So there are things that can happen that could not happen prior. We talked a lot about the pains of the season, which has been painful. Like I said, 12-11 isn't great. I do want to talk about the growing part of the growing pains, which has been inconsistent this year. Just a little bit of positivity on my end as the eternal optimist. There are two guys this year that I think are exceeding my expectations, which are already pretty high, at least for one of these guys. One of those, I think, is Tristan Da Silva, who is currently the only option on offense. Past KJ Simpson and is rising to that challenge almost nightly. He's gotten a lot of points off of some really weird defensive spots where people know he's the guy. And I think that I don't know if a year early is the right word, but I definitely was not expecting him to blossom offensively like this, fully. So I don't know. I think he's a legit number one option for a Power Five team, which is crazy good. The other guy I do want to mention very briefly, of course, is Lawson Lovering. All of us are Lawson Lovering defenders, quote unquote, and we have liked him since he signed. It can be hard for people who aren't watching a lot of college basketball to see a 7-foot center like him miss those easy passes in the lane or miss those layups and still see the value. But I was telling Sam this, I went. I forgot what game I was. I think I was at the Oregon home game, and just watching Lawson Lovering shove people into the right defensive position, and watching Lawson Lovering bark out every single switch that needed to happen. It was incredible. It really was incredible. He is a defensive asset past what I thought he would be this year, and he's growing offensively. That USC game away from home will stick in
you
my mind.
You saw the flashes, yeah.
So those are the two guys I wanted to mention as full growth candidates. From what we expected earlier this year. So I just want to open it up for the floor, overall season thoughts, player thoughts, position thoughts. You know, I guess, how do you feel about the guys on this roster right now? We talked about KJ a little bit, but.
We talked about Javon Ruffin. I'm a lot higher on him than I was a month ago, 2 months ago. Like,
absolutely.
He certainly seems like a really solid contributor that we can look toward in future years. I think he's got a lot to his game, a lot more than just his defense still got to come along a little bit, but that's also a playing time thing, right? Like he hasn't had a lot of playing time with the full team, you know, the frontline team, the ones more or less. So yeah, he's going to struggle a little bit on that defensive aspect, but I think with time, he's probably going to get there. That's usually the last thing to come. Tristan is interesting for me because I've long ago decided that if I say positive things about Tristan, he's going to struggle. And if I say negative things about Tristan, he's going to, you know, blow it away. So I have a always be criticizing policy when it comes to Tristan. Tristan. But yeah, absolutely. The problem is he's making it really difficult on me because he's having a really strong year. And he's doing things offensively that you're like, yeah, we can make use of that. His ability to create in the paint and, you know, actually hit that outside shot and things like that. Like, that's really important. You talked about Lawson. We're a top 20 defensive club, largely in part because of Lawson.
Totally agree.
If Lawson wasn't who he was in the paint and running those defensive calls and all that other stuff, we're not a top 20 defensive club, and this season's a lot worse than it even is. You know, Hadley's been an interesting case because he surprised us out of the gate. He really surprised us out of the gate. I think he had a rough late December, early January, and I think I'm starting to, and I think it was because of injury related. I really think he hurt his shoulder again because he hurt his shoulder in South Carolina, in that tournament, and then I think he might have re-injured it or re-aggravated it at some point because I started noticing him favor shoulder again. But he's starting to get it back a little bit. He can be a good solid contributor. The problem is he's not that outside threat. You know, his skill set is more of a four.
Yeah.
And we need him to be a three. So we're back in a position where we're playing guys out of spots again. Those would be the guys I'd highlight as, okay, maybe they've shown me a little bit more than I was expecting.
I think part of it, too, with Hadley was that, as Jack pointed out before, it's like his limited athleticism kind of showed up against better athletes in the Pac-12.
Just taller guys, too. It wasn't even just better athletes, just taller dudes.
Yeah.
I'll say this, I don't know if a comp is the right word, but I love his little junky left hand, like, I don't know if a jump hook's even the right word, but it seems like he just, like, turns it so fast that the defender's, like, surprised he even puts it up when he's in the middle of the lane, and it goes in, like, 80% of the time. It reminds me a little bit, and this is going to be a name that some people might know and hate, but it reminds me a little bit of JJ Avila with that, if you remember that CSU guy. Where he just threw in these weird junky layups. He was also 6'5", and like, I don't know. I think that's such a valuable asset to have of just like, hey, 5 seconds, go get a bucket, and he just has this one move. That's all you need, really.
Yeah.
For that little weird lefty spot. I don't know. I like his touch there. Sam, who stood out to you so far?
Well, I'll toot my own horn a little bit because I said that Tristan would break out offensively. That was my just because I just love his funky game, and I was hoping, like, maybe he'll realize that he can just get a bucket anytime he wants.
Yeah.
And he has mostly. Like, he still does take a backseat to KJ, and I think that kind of shows up when CU is struggling offensively and KJ gets a little chucky. I'm happy to see him take on that larger role, especially, like, again, Tad challenged him to play better on the road and to, like, put in the effort. And then he goes out and has two great games against Oregon and Oregon State.
Career high in rebounds against Oregon State. Something that we don't really see from him very often.
Yeah. I also, I've been really high on Javon Ruffin for a couple of years. And was like, he just seemed, what?
No, you have mentioned him, usually in the context of his hair, which is still incredible, but yes.
No. No, I'm saying that I've been saying, like, I generally have a weakness for...
You like heady players. Can I say that? You like players that have weird, like, heady spots, and he's a smart guy. Can I say that? Is that fair?
Yeah. I was about to say, like, I like big, smart wing or guards who might not be the most explosive, but they, like, get to their spots and they play at their own pace, and, like,
yeah.
And I've been quite pleasantly surprised by how well he's been shooting it, because that was a question mark heading into the year.
You brought up pace. You brought up pace, and I think that's critical. He doesn't get sped up like some of the other guys do.
Yep.
I never feel like the game is going too fast for Javon.
Mm-hmm. You can tell he's the son of an NBA player / scout. Like, it's super – he's so calm. But, yeah, continue. Sorry.
I just think he's going to be – I think he'll start his junior and senior years, and he's going to be a very, very solid player. And then I think, as Ben pointed out, I think he'll figure out the defensive end, especially once he can, like, stay healthy and get those reps on the court.
He's shocked me with how well he can stay in front of people. I did not think he was going to be able to stay in front of people that well. And I don't know how well he is doing it, but more than I expected, I guess.
What was that, Ben?
Coming off the injury last year.
Yeah.
His lateral quickness would have been a reasonable concern.
Yeah. And then, like, my other pleasant surprise would be Luke O'Brien, who hasn't really been that great offensively, but he goes hard, and we need someone to bring energy like him.
That's a good transition. Go ahead.
Yeah. Luke is an interesting case because, you know, and this is something Will brought up back in the first pod too, is just if he could just hit a little bit of those shots and be that DM3 guy.
Yep.
You know, he is incredibly valuable, incredibly valuable, and he can't get the three part. Like, I think he's on pace to get to the shot numbers that Will had wanted. You know, he's not making any of them,
nope.
Which is a huge, huge problem. But yeah, his his energy when it's on display is really cool. Particularly the way he attacks the offensive glass, that's important. Yeah. Particularly in this squad, particularly in this system, you got to have someone trying to get those offensive rebounds. It's just the other parts just aren't working. And the other thing is we have to play him at the five sometimes, and that really, I think that really, again, guys playing out of position.
Yeah, I think I overestimated Tristan's ability to play small ball five too.
Yeah,
which those minutes
defensively
have not been,
like, for sure. Yeah,
defensively it's not great. But that is Tad's go-to crunch time lineup.
Yeah,
like he takes Lawson off.
Yep. So, you know, you mentioned a few playing out of position a few times, Ben. I think to me, that's like, I don't know if the main thing, but a huge thing that's wrong with this team right now is. They are having to rely on Hadley and O'Brien for huge minutes a lot of the time, even in spots where they may not be comfortable because there are deficiencies elsewhere that have not rectified themselves yet. So I think we've all – I don't know if danced around is the right term, but I just want to talk about, I guess, my biggest issue with this team. The wing spots are non-existent, especially on offense, I guess, is what I'm going to say. So I think Nick Clifford was slated to take a massive step up, or a big step up, at least. I think Tad wanted him to do that. I think that's the rise at media days. That's why, I mean, he starts every game. And that just hasn't happened. And it hasn't happened because – I shouldn't say – it's not because he isn't playing the right minutes or because – there isn't enough opportunity. It hasn't happened because the same thing I've had a problem with Clifford with for 3 years of just like, it just feels like he doesn't realize what he can do 90% of the time. And it just doesn't happen that way. Past that, the two additions to this program, Jalen Gabbert and Ethan Wright, have alternated between injured and unplayable and in a very mean term, but it's really hard to play Ethan Wright when he's not hitting shots, and very often he's not hitting shots. And Jalen Gabadon is injured, and when he's not injured, when he plays, I like the leadership he brings and the defensive intensity he brings, but on offense, he tries a lot of stuff that he got away with in the Ivy League that I feel like also hurts him in the Pac-12. So all of this is a very uncharitable way to say, when you look at that second unit and just the wing spot in general, there's just this massive offensive black hole. Like, there's nothing you can rely on from any of those guys. And I'm going to add Julian Hammond in part to that list, who I thought was a really good PNR operator who has gotten away from a lot of what made him successful, in my opinion. You just can't rely on any of them on offense, and it's really hurting this team, in my opinion.
So you hit on another thing that, you know, going forward in future years, I need to pay attention to, and that's the grad transfer from Ivy League schools. I used to criticize Cal a lot because they would dip into the Ivy, yeah, and there'd be all this preseason hype. You know, all the leading scorer from the Ivy is on Cal now.
Defensive player of the year, two times in a row.
15, yeah. This 15 and 10 guy from an Ivy school is now on Cal, and he's going to be leading the front line. Yeah. Everyone's screwed because of that. And then they have just a guy season. They're just there. They're fine. Mm-hmm. You know, they put up numbers. And now we're seeing it on Colorado's behalf. You know, and it's not to really slight them, but they're just – Tab brought him in as a hedge against positional needs. You brought up Neek. Like, okay, Neek's gonna we need Neek to step up. Here's a hedge. We bring in these two senior dudes in the two and three slots to sort of hedge that need. You know, none of it hits.
I mean, I would love if Ethan Wright was just a guy. But
yeah. And you know, we've mentioned they both had injuries and some other things, but there's not any aspect of it where I think they've lived up to expectations or potential for various numbers of reasons.
I mean, if there's anything, Tad does love Gabadon, and apparently
he does.
He's a great leader in the locker room.
He's got a great head on his shoulders. He's really good defensively. He's not going to contribute offensively. He's too slow-footed to create an offensive impact from the wing at this level.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a plus athlete kind of guy. He's smart and he knows the game, so he's going to play well defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, that's, you know, one of the reasons we brought him in for. But it's hard to have a lineup when you're okay. Lawson is not going to contribute offensively. He's not there yet. Okay, and now Neek's struggling, and now we're going to throw a third guy on the court who can't contribute offensively.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to run offensive possessions like that?
Sam, what was the lineup that you saw against the Oregon game?
Oh, no.
Was it Hammond, Wright, Gabadon?
Oh, Jesus.
O'Brien, Lovering or something? We're just like, who's going to score? Is there anyone on that team who's going to score?
I think Tad played that out of a timeout for like 40 seconds and then immediately subbed out everyone.
The ball boys got a better chance of scoring.
Yeah, it's that to me is the issue with this game. There is obviously a preseason expectation that someone on the wing would be able to put up 10 points a game. It just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. And
what should your reaction as a coach be to this? It's probably to shorten the bench, but you can't do that. You really can't at this point because the options to shorten the bench
don't
look that promising either. So
Preston isn't back yet, is he?
No. One guy we've mentioned as a bench scorer and positive player is injured right now. So when you go on that road trip, it's tough.
It seemed like speaking of Ruff, it sounded like he was close last week. So I would expect him to play this week.
I hope so. Yeah. I'm sorry for ranting there, but I just think that is the big issue when I watch this team is for 3 years I've watched Neek Clifford, who has an NBA body and is the fastest second jumper I've seen in a long time and can lead the break off the rebounds. And he does that like 10% of the time. And I just get so frustrated when like there's so much space for him to score points on this team right now. There's no one else really getting in his way. But it's just not his personality. It's just not who he is. I mean, I need to accept that.
Even then, I think like he wants to be a role player. And I think the player he wants to be is someone who can spot up and drill those threes like whenever they come to him. And he just hasn't been a good shooter at all. And it's like his misses aren't even close. Like he had that play. It's actually one of my favorite plays in basketball from a comedy perspective. Of doing the pump fake, taking one dribble in, and then airballing the mid range too long. It's like, oh, that would have been good.
Locked up the three. Yeah.
It happens all the time. But no, he's been real bad. Oh, 25% on three.
That was the number I put in there. It's 40% last year, 24% this year. I don't know if it's a confidence thing. It's just not there. And I think CU really needed it to be there for him this year.
No.
And how much of this is on us for expecting him to be Deshaun Schwartz?
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah.
It's not his game. And I kind of tried to temper my expectations for him based on that. Like, he's a slasher. Like, that's what he's meant to be. He's meant to be more Jerron Hopkins, right? And Jerron didn't really fit this program identity either, because he, you know, we weren't really looking for his skill set at that time. Yep. And that's maybe where I think this is going, is we're playing guys out of the positions that they maybe would excel at, not because of, you know, stubbornness or anything like that, but it's just what needs to happen in order to make the thing go.
Yeah, I will say, though, that part of the reasoning of that expectation was that Neek himself said he was trying to be like Deshaun.
Sure.
But there's
a time for me to, you know, say, oh, I want to be that guy. And there's also a time for me to say, oh, I am this guy. I am me, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But as you mentioned,
I was going to
compare myself saying, let me do my bit. Go ahead. Want to think that I'm Manu Ginobili, but then I'm just shitty Evan Turner. It's like, sometimes, yeah, I get it.
Shout out Evan Turner, man. I don't know. It's kind of what you mentioned, Ben, too, of like, I agree. Whenever I watch Clifford do that, and he's playing so many minutes, and I just get so mad, not at the ineffectiveness, but the lack of attempts of effectiveness. But then you look at, like, well, where does Tad go? Like, what do you put in instead of Neek Clifford? Because it's hard. It's really hard. Luke O'Brien already playing out of role, in my opinion. Like, what do you start Luke O'Brien and hope he can blossom into that 25, 30 minutes a guy? Do you play Hadley more? He's already playing a lot. It's just, there's not a lot of options there this year. We talked in the preseason too of this year being kind of a stage setter for what next year could be.
Yeah.
I think that's thrown in sharper relief as that has happened, as this season has progressed, of just what the needs are and how they are potentially being filled next year. But man, they just desperately need an offense initiator and scoring on the wing, in my opinion. And it seems like that's coming next year, but it doesn't help us this year, of course.
Go ahead. Enter a top five player in the country.
Yes. Who some analysts have said could be number one.
Which is scary and fills me with various emotions. But to that point, I think we've been successful in the recruiting class. I'm excited to see him on campus. I mean, okay, so frontline depth is an issue. Well, Pearl Bird will have another year of strength training under his shoulders and hopefully he'll be able to contribute. Same with Lawson. I think he'll, you know, his body will continue to grow and things like that. But then we're also adding on the front line. And then when we get to the wing, I think we're adding some competent offensive components. Bringing in Cody will allow us to hopefully pay KJ a little bit more at the two rather than the point.
Yep.
Which I think is going to be much more comfortable for him.
Yep.
And just overall, I think there'll be better balance on the team next year.
And like you mentioned, I also think there's a potential that we see one or more transfers coming in at the end of the year as well. Because I don't think anyone's happy with this season. Of course. So
there'll be some movement.
Yeah. One name we haven't mentioned yet that gets mentioned a lot, and I guess I'll be generous here and say for more football-centric fans, is Quincy Allen. Quincy Allen was a top 50 recruit coming out of high school. I think Quincy Allen has the potential, could be a three-level scorer at some point in his college career. I still like his athleticism, as it seems people within the program do. I still like his jump shot, though he airballed more threes than he's made this year. I will also say, just watching very little garbage time with Quincy Allen, and obviously Tad's seen him way more than anyone else has, there's a reason he's not playing. And I don't think it's because he's a bad teammate. I don't think it's because he's selfish. I think there's just that he does not have what we need on the defensive side of the ball. And frankly, when he's not holding the ball on offense. And like, that's a big, like 80% of the game. It would be nice if he blossomed into that 8 points a game guy that we mentioned before the year, but he's just not there. What do we make of Quincy Allen?
What I make of him is he needs more time. I'm not throwing baby out with the bathwater. I'm not saying he'll never be a good basketball player, but right now he's not going to contribute. He's not going to make things better by being out there. There's a reason why his playing time is what it is.
Yep.
And other things, I mean, he hasn't, even his small, like, spots on the court. Like his last one, which I'm pretty sure was against Oregon State at home, he dunks after the whistle, which I know, Tad. Like, I saw him shake his head. And in that moment, I think I even tweeted it out. I was like, Quincy's not seeing the court the rest of the year. Like, that's – you can't do that.
To give some perspective, I was at Moby Arena when George King did that to CSU. And that was at the buzzer. It wasn't after the buzzer. Tad Boyle lit his ass up. Oh, yeah. Oh my God, he lit him up.
And there's also the McKinley Wright to Tyler Bay alley-oop where Tad literally tore his calf.
He tore his Achilles. He tore his Achilles going on the court.
So Tad, you know, Tad expects a class, you know, he wants a classy program. He wants to build a classy program. The last thing he wants to do is show other dudes up. You know, he's not Dana Altman. He's not going to show other dudes up. You know, and ultimately that's going to be a situation that's really going to negatively, if you're already on the fringe or if you're already like, hey coach, can I get 2 minutes at the end of a blowout? That kind of player.
Yeah,
for you to showboat in a way that's showing the other team up, like, that's not going to help your case.
Yeah, unless it's USC.
Unless it's USC, but that's a special case. You can show them up all you want. If it was against USC, Tad might have given them an extra 5 minutes. I know what people see: the recruiting ranking. They see a guy who can dunk. They see a guy who can high point a jump shot.
Yeah,
and all this stuff, and you know, jump out of the building and all this stuff. And I know what they're trying to go after, but basketball is not just running out and jumping around. Like, you have to be organized. You have to work with the other four teammates.
Yep.
I think it's like an NBA draft lingo with, like, the empty gym player.
Yeah. And again, that's not to say he can't get there. He just needs more time. That's fine. That's acceptable. My guy gave you 4 years.
I think the other thing about that is there is no better program in the country where you can develop at your pace than Colorado. Tad Boyle will not – he will ask things of you, but he will not rush you. Like, it is on you to develop, and when it happens at your pace, you get George King. Or, you know, I guess Spencer Dinwiddie was a little bit more hurried, but you get Spencer Dinwiddie.
George is a great example. George is a great example of a guy who was completely lost his freshman year, who was near unplayable, has a sophomore redshirt year, second year redshirt year, which is near unheard
of. You never see that. You never see that.
And then comes back and blows the door off the gym.
Yep.
And I'm not saying Quincy, you know, needs that much time or will be George King or anything like that, but that's a great example of how time can affect the basketball player.
Never forget, George King and Josh Scott started in the NCAA tournament game with Tommy Sacchizzilli and Xavier Tolton as the starting point guards. You know, never forget.
They have Thomas Akizili's picture on the wall with, like, the buffs in professional sports.
Professionals, yeah.
Yeah.
I should mention that. I had dogged the program for a while for not highlighting their professional players enough. Yeah. And I come in the arena this year, and there's a wall of all the pros. And I thought that was really cool. I thought that was really cool from the program to do, and kudos to them for making that happen at the CEC.
Yeah. And, you know, shout out NCAA for making Derek White sit a year, even though he's transferring within the same university system. That would have been his senior year, just saying. But regardless, we talked – So looking at the schedule on KenPom, CU has two home games against Cal and Stanford coming up. You hope to God those are wins. And then they have all quad A and B wins, quad 1 and 2 games, I should say, to end the year. It's a really hard stretch to end the year. That's true. Better chance against number 1 than number 250.
Yeah. We actually, I mean, I didn't bring this up earlier, but we actually played pretty well against UCLA and USC. Like,
UCLA, we played really well. Yeah. I'm shocked that we held them down as far as we did. And then once they started making threes, it was over. But
I mean, yeah. And it was also a lot of bad turnovers.
So I guess – big collapse. Yeah. So I guess I just want to mention real quick, how do we see the rest of the season going? We've talked about our disappointment so far this year. Everyone's disappointed, including Tad. But do we think they can salvage something, an NIT bid, something near the end of this year?
So this is obviously a get-right week. You have to win those two games.
Yep.
You probably should look pretty good against Stanford and Cal. Did you lose to them a couple – you know, yeah, you lost to Cal on the road. Yeah, you shouldn't have done that. You should also beat them by 30 tomorrow. That's just how it is, and there's really no excuses there. Stanford, they're They can be feisty, but you should win that game. The problem then becomes we're going to lose by 30 to Utah. We're going to lose by 30 to Arizona. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen against ASU, but we're going to get the doors blown off us in Salt Lake.
Have they had their in-season collapse yet, ASU?
ASU, I don't know who they are this year. I really don't.
Yeah, they've gone up and down. I will say they mitigated the in-season by collapse by just kicking off the most talented players off the team, and that seems to have helped them.
Oh, yeah, Marcus Bagley, good. Yeah, that was a great loss for them.
You know, really? They've lost four straight. I don't know who Arizona State is right now. Get back to me in a week or two. So whatever you do this week, whatever positivity you get this week, you're going to probably lose it in Salt Lake. You're going to get it doubly reinforced negatively in Tucson because that game is not going to go well for it.
Yeah.
And then you got three brutal home games to conclude. That's rolling some real long odds. Yeah. So could the team rebound and get to the 18-win mark? Sure. Are they? Probably not. I think it'll be a struggle to maintain 500 with the strength and schedule down the stretch. And that's really rough. That's really rough to look at a season where, you know, I'm looking at going 8-12, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, that's not where this program should be.
Yep. We botched our winnable stretches.
Yep.
And if we don't sweep Cal Stanford, it's like going to get bad.
It's real bad.
I mean, it was this stretch that we just finished. That was a winnable stretch. Like, you end it with two games you need to win at home. But, like, the Washington road trip, the Oregon road trip. You know,
Washington at home.
Hosting the Washington schools. Like, that needed to be split at the very least. And you expect to build some momentum there. And when I listen back, like, we were talking about letting the young guys grow into their role during that stretch. Growth didn't work that way. Like, it just didn't work out. And now this season's kind of busted unless you make a miraculous run at the end here, in my opinion. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. I'm expecting around 17 wins, 16 wins near that Ischia Booker senior year season.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hope like hell for 1-2 in the Pac-12 tournament. But all eyes on next year.
Please, Tad, please, 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 please do not accept the invite from the CBI if it comes. They call you, you lose their number.
Seattle U, baby. Watching Torrey Miller check up 10 shots.
We never doing that again.
Shout out Deleon Brown, man, and that great halftime entertainment. Oh, man. Rodney Billups, what a guy. So, yeah, I think, you know, this midseason check-in, all of us are disappointed with what we've seen, though it hews kind of closely to what we expected near the beginning of the year. I just think that the development, especially on the wing spots, hasn't been what we needed. And we've mentioned it a few times, but really all eyes on next year. It's kind of been how I've been looking at this year the whole time anyways, with just what we have coming in. It's obviously very exciting. I guess any final thoughts before we close this chapter? Of the season.
I'll go first because my laptop is going to die at any second now. I don't even have my thoughts together. Go ahead, Ben.
this is a puke and rally moment. We complete this season, we vomit, and then we get back on track. It's puke and rally time. You know, the program is, I still consider the program strong. I look at next year, I see the pieces coming in. I see the bedrock, and I see the potential. I'm still happy with that. You know, this is a tough moment. This is a tough year. Just puke and rally.
Yeah, I think we need to see flashes from those fringe players who may or may not be back next year. Tad has been, I mean, surely he's been challenging these players internally. And we saw a good game from Neek against Oregon on the road.
Yeah.
And like immediately after, I'm sure he got challenged. We just need to see some positive growth from those types of players. Cause like, we know what KJ is. I mean, obviously we could see him grow too. We know what Tristan is. We know what Lawson is. Just find your rotation for next year. Maybe get some wins. It's not going to be like, I think that NIT is lost. So.
Yeah. You know, I guess I'm going to end this thought with, I've seen a lot of what I expected to see this year and more out of certain players too, but it's just so uneven. that it's so easy for me to look forward to having new blood and having new offensive blood, especially next year. So I guess I'm watching the end of this year, just looking at where we can slot Cody Williams and potentially other options. It's hard to finish this year the way we have, but I guess just people didn't pan out the way we expected it to. And I will say, better Rocketap Oil teams, it doesn't seem like there's any cancers in the locker room. It doesn't seem like these players don't want to try anymore. I think they're all really good teammates to each other for the most part. It just seems like this equation didn't work out. I'm excited to see what that looks like next year when hopefully it does.
Yeah, I would second that analysis. I haven't gotten any sense that there's animosity or anything like that, like we maybe saw this year or some of the
– Or XJ there. West, Derek
yeah,
West Senior.
Yeah. We haven't had those moments, and this is a bunch of good guys, which is what is kind of underscoring how painful it's been, because I want to root for them. You know, I want to celebrate those wins with them. So,
all right, well, we will watch the end of the year with great interest. Thank you, Ben, for coming on once again for this check-in, and we appreciate your flexibility. And Sam, thanks for rocking through that battery.
Yeah, I'm glad I made it through. Didn't think it would.
Buffs!